The Court of the State of Nevada is now in session. The Honorable Justice Breyer presiding.
Thank you. Please be seated. Good morning, everybody. We have a very busy day today. We have five cases on, and our first case this morning is case number 55572, Joe's Peak Ranch versus Douglas County. Are the parties ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor. Kelly Chase for the appellant.
Mr. Chase and Mr. Ritchie and Mr. Group. Okay, Mr. Chase.
Thank you, Justice. Sherry, Justice Pickering, and Justice Hardy, thank you. With the limited amount of time here, I'm going to focus on two issues. The first one being the governing statute that's supposed to apply to this case. The second one would be the standard of review. But as an initial point, I want to just state that part of the problem on the repair costs that we're talking about here, it's not just the cost of what it would take to treat the water to bring it up to standards for servicing Job's Peak. Those are the repair costs on one level. The other part is that the county has put in a treatment plant that is for a regional system. So there are costs that are in that that should appropriately be for other parcels to help pay for. And that's part of the issue that we'll get into on the governing statute. Under the Fourth Amendment, and I call the Fourth Amendment and the dedication agreement as one and the same because they basically have the same language and they're done approximately at the same time. So the Fourth Amendment, when I say that, includes the dedication agreement. But the statute that governs the Fourth Amendment and the 09 resolution should be the same statute because both of those actions by the county changed the manner and the amounts of charging fees for delivery of the water service. So they perform the same function, so I would think that since they are talking about water rates and charges, that those would be governed by the same statute. Under the Fourth Amendment, the homeowner position on that obviously is that the action on the Fourth Amendment was invalid because it changed the original water service funding ordinance, which was the development agreement that was enacted by ordinance. So the Fourth Amendment changed that. It contradicted that. That's one ground. Obviously, the other one was the lack of notice because Chapter 278 was used in that under the Fourth Amendment to used as authority. In fact, the dedication agreement and the Fourth Amendment, the only referral to any legal authority is the dedication agreement, which was created under 278, and they were amending it under Chapter 278. Chapter 278 simply doesn't apply here. The district court found that as far as the resolution, but it didn't consider whether or not that statute would apply to the Fourth Amendment. There's no authority in Chapter 278 to fund or operate or even own a water system. The district court found that. There are other statutes that do govern water service fees and by express authority. And that's Chapters 244, Chapter 318, and Chapter 271. And I would submit that all three of those statutes preempt 278 by any means. On
Council, could we back up the train a little bit?
Yes, sir.
The development agreement was adopted in accordance with the provisions of Chapter 278. Wouldn't any amendment have to be analyzed under that same chapter?
Yes, and not only under the analysis of what you're talking about, which I will get to, but also there's the aspect that what is the action actually doing? They're not just simply amending a development agreement; they're changing the development agreement and its impact and the vested rights that I've been talking about. In fact, I don't think 278, I think if you read 278, it actually precludes the action based on what the action is.
Let's examine that question. My understanding of the development agreement and 278-0205 is that the successors and interest purchasers of property had a right to consent to an amendment to the development agreement.
That's our position, Your Honor. Yes. Well, and that is under 205 subsection 1. The other aspect of that same statute, though, is also that Part 2 of that subsection 2 states that if the amendment has to be consistent with the master plan. And when you look at the contrast between what they did with the Fourth Amendment and relieving the developer from obligations under the development agreement, that you're not going to find that in the master plan anywhere. And I think it's really ironic that the same time that they were doing the Fourth Amendment, at the same period of time that the Douglas County was going through quite a thing about the growth control element of the master plan, where the SGI case that came before you was decided, where they're limiting growth. And I think it's really ironic, if not an abuse of discretion, to be talking about funding public infrastructure based on speculation on growth, because they connected it to connection fees, and they're talking about future residential growth, and that's speculative. And I don't think that's any way to run a government.
Council, let's just focus on the rights of your of those parties, members of the association, who you claim had a right to consent to the Fourth Amendment. If 02051 granted them that right and the development agreement itself granted them that right, what does the record show with respect to notice given to your clients of the Fourth Amendment?
There's no individual notice to the homeowners.
There was public notice.
There was public notice published in the paper. And all it said, Your Honor, was we're amending the Fourth Amendment or the development agreement. It did not say we're amending the Fourth Agreement, we're amending the development agreement by increasing and changing the water rates and how you're going to pay for your water.
Where in Chapter 278 would the county have been required to give individual notice of a potential amendment?
I think under 0205, because again, the successors in interest have to have mutual. Subparagraph 1, the agreement may be amended by mutual consent of the parties or their successors in interest. And I think as soon as you sell one lot there, you have a successor in interest, and that person should be notified directly.
That requirement, the requirement of personal notice, is implied in the statute by virtue of the fact that their consent is required.
Not only the statute, Your Honor, but one of the major distinctions that, and this goes to part two of argument on the standard of
well, let's not go there. Let's bite off the element a piece at a time. The briefs are extremely difficult to follow in this case.
I understand.
And I'm asking counsel to focus their attention on the legal issues that we can understand. And you both seem to argue that Chapter 278 applies, but come at different results. So I'm trying to understand that.
Right. I do submit that it is implicit in 0205, but I'm also arguing that once you get into a development agreement, you start to walk away from Chapter 278, and you start to get into contract law. And this overlay of contract law, I think the district court completely missed here, because you've got the Williams case that says whether to enter into a contract in the first instance was in the discretion of the city, but once the contractual relationship was established, the obligations to fulfill the terms of the contract become an operational function, imposing upon the city the duty to exercise ordinary care, and for the breach of which liability may be found. So when you start having a development agreement, you're starting to move away from 278, and I think you have the overlay of contract law. And any time you start messing around with a contract in any other setting, you have to sit down with the parties of interest. So it's a combination of what's implied in 205, okay. 0205, and under contract law.
All right. Then I'd like you to address this question. Assuming for the moment that your clients had a right to consent, and that was not obtained, why isn't your claim with respect to the absence of consent barred under the time limits contained in Chapter 278?
Notice. If you're not noticed, how can you object? And the second aspect of the Fourth Amendment, at least, was the homeowner association was governed by the declarant, by the developer. The control of that association didn't pass to the homeowners until at least 90 days after the Fourth Amendment was enacted. So they weren't noticed. They weren't even invited to the table, so to speak.
Well, the association is suing, I assume, in this case, under its representational authority under Chapter 116 and the agreements, as the district court found. I don't think there's any dispute about that. The question, though, is if the court were to conclude, if this panel were to conclude, that notice was sufficient by publication, does the statute of limitations, statute 0235, bar your claim? And if not, why not?
If you're going to say that notice was effective, that's one half of the argument. The other half is we weren't damaged. Damages should be an element under the statute of limitations. The homeowners that existed there were of two categories. The homeowners that lived there, owned, and were there. And then there's the owner, the developer, that owned the rest of the properties. So the notice itself was not effective to put the existing homeowners on notice that they were going to change the rate of funding those infrastructure problems. So the notice, I think, is ineffective to begin with. But secondly, if you consider the notice effective, we weren't damaged. The homeowner association, the individual members, were not damaged until resolution in 09, the 09 resolution.
Weren't you damaged immediately because the Fourth Amendment altered your vested rights concerning connection fees and obligation to contribute to repair costs?
Right, and that was not in the notice. It just simply said we're amending. And usually amendments...
I understand. I understand your argument on notice. I'm just focusing on if notice is treated as acceptable. Do you agree or disagree that the Chapter 278 statute of limitations, which requires the filing of an action within, I think it's 25 days, does that statute apply to this circumstance?
I don't see how it can because, again, I'm looking at the function of what they did when they modified the Fourth Amendment. It wasn't just adjusting boundary lines. It wasn't just doing something else within the subdivision. It was made a major substantive change. And when you start doing that, again, vested interests, all these other things, I don't think Chapter 278 applies to the Fourth Amendment.
Would Chapter 278.0235 apply to your contract argument under Williams?
No.
Why not?
Because Chapter 278 doesn't apply. It's the contract side of that. Williams talked about the discretionary decision to enter into the development agreement. That's 278. That's the 25-day notice or time for a petition for judicial review. Beyond that, you get into the contract side of it. And let me ask you,
there were some number of lots in this project that were unsold.
Yes, Your Honor. I know there are 55 users in Job's Peak. I think some of those may be another subdivision that was put into this district, I guess, if you can say they even formed a district.
Could you clarify for me, are those who have a right to consent to the Fourth Amendment the 55 owners, or all of the lots within the subdivision? And if it's all of the lots, they were owned by Five Creek, so when they signed off on the amendment, didn't that satisfy that requirement for all lots, save and except the 55?
Well, no, because he wasn't representing the homeowners. And that's the whole issue about the fiduciary relationship and the breach of that, that, again, was dismissed. He wasn't representing the homeowners. He was representing his own interest. He didn't give any consideration to be relieved of those obligations.
Your argument is under 278.0205 and the development agreement, the lot owner has a right to consent to any amendments. I don't know how many lots we're talking about beyond 55, but even if it's one, the lots owned by Five Creek, he that entity consented to the amendment. Why isn't that consent effective as to those lots?
They weren't notified. They didn't even know that was going on. And
how would they notify people who don't own the lots?
Well, I'm sorry. Misunderstood your question. At that point in time, there were four phases of the subdivision that had been granted. And out of that, I don't know the number of lots, and I don't know the percentages, but there were quite a few, if not the majority of them, that were owned by individual homeowners. The rest
Council, on February 2nd, 2006, when the Fourth Amendment was adopted, how many lots were owned by non-Five Creek people?
About 55, I believe.
Okay. So with respect, all the other lots were owned by Five Creek?
Yes.
So why isn't Five Creek's consent to the development agreement amendment effective under 0205 as to those lots?
Because there was no consent by the rest of the homeowners, even under a meeting with an association or anything like that. They were just completely left out of the process. The Fourth Amendment and the bottom line, the deal under the Fourth Amendment was cut behind closed doors without any participation or even knowledge by the remaining homeowners. It was advertised as we're amending this thing, and then later we found out that the import of what they did.
Well, what you're saying then is we should construe 0205 to provide that when there is an amendment to the development agreement, the amendment has to be consented to unanimously by every lot owner?
Well, I think it does. If you're changing these kinds of substantive rights, I think you have to have consent. I mean, these are property rights. These are recorded documents that give these people a right to have something pertinent to their property. So if you're going to start saying, well, we can cut this deal and we don't have to give you direct notice and we're going to change all this stuff and affect your rights, I just don't think that passes
muster. Well, if the amendment isn't effective as to the 55 homeowners, their rights are unaffected.
They're using it now as that. Again, that goes back to the statute of limitations issue. You have to be aware that you have a claim. And the existing homeowners didn't have a claim because the money was going to be paid by somebody else. So there was no claim. They weren't notified of a claim. They weren't aware of a claim. What happened was three years later, they passed this resolution that said, and by the way, because we amended that Fourth Amendment, we get to take money from you now. And by that time, again, we were lulled into a lot of representations that we were not going to have to pay for this, and by both the county and the developer. And the developer did this behind closed doors, and it only became public by a real, you know, generic notice. And the reason they want to do that is they do not want to get into the proportionality argument under 271, which I think is the more appropriate statute. They don't want to get into that apportionment argument. In fact, in their brief, they're saying, at page 20, they're saying 318 does not impose the full apportioned cost of capital improvement projects directly on the property benefited, but instead a monthly fee is charged to individuals based on the rates by the board. They're not interested in the constitutional constraints that if you're going to pass an assessment, it has to be apportioned according to the benefit. They are saying right now that they construe 318 as allowing them to charge any kind of fee for any kind of benefit, little or not, just based on what they need. And I don't think 318 implies that. I think it's just the opposite. They're supposed to form a district with specified lots and with uniform service at a uniform rate. And that certainly conforms with constitutional requirements. And the county, in their own brief, in the answering brief, they're saying 318 allows us to ignore that constitutional constraint. And that's where they're going with this. This was cut behind closed doors. They went to this, they tried to use this as an enterprise fund to begin with, and now they get to the resolution in 09, and they say, and by the way, because we did this back in the Fourth Amendment, we changed to property rights, and now we can even do it even again. And again, the county is looking at this as they are unconstrained, and that's the whole point. And when you look at the statutes that apply here, I don't think 318 applies. Because, and the primary point is on 271.
Please wrap it up. I need you to wrap it up.
Thank you, Your Honor. I will. Under 271.130, it allows an improvement district to be consist of non-contiguous areas. And that's what we have here. So if you apply the facts to the statutes, 318 doesn't work. 271 does. And, in fact, that same statute should be the statute that they're proceeding under consolidation, because they're talking about consolidating the North Valley with Job's Peak or whatever they're doing. And 271 is the only statute that allows non-contiguous areas in an improvement district. So 318 doesn't apply, and 271, I think, does. I thank you for your time.
Mr. Ritchie.
Thank you. What's interesting about this case is that originally the homeowners are upset because of a rate resolution. It was an interim rate resolution while the county was trying to conduct rate studies as they're trying to consolidate the water systems within the county. They prevailed on that argument. But what's interesting is they weren't satisfied with that. They bootstrapped that in to challenge a planning and zoning decision that was made by the county more than 3.5 years earlier. Now, as I understand it, they're upset because, one, the water system had certain things that they wanted fixed. There was some, they describe it as a defect. For the purpose of the argument, we'll say, well, they believe it was defective and there's something should have been done before the county accepted that system. Now, and they didn't want to have their rates increased to pay for that system. Now, what's interesting is that it's undisputed the county fixed the problem that they are alleging. The water had high levels of carbon dioxide. It's the same thing that you drink in Coke. This afternoon when you drink, you're going to be drinking pressurized, flavored water with high levels of carbonation in it. Now, the county fixed that. It's also undisputed that the county has subsidized that Job's Peak during this interim period while the county is conducting the rate consolidation studies. So, where we're at is the problem's been fixed, the county's been subsidizing the rates from the general fund, and now the county has, on February 2nd, 2012, the Board of County Commissioners voted to consolidate all the water systems within Douglas County. And the ratepayers, all of them, are going to get the lower rates that they requested. So the county is wondering, what more do they want? What do these users want? Their system's been improved, the county subsidized it from the general funds, and now that the consolidation has been voted on, they're going to achieve the lower rates that they wanted. Now,
well, what do you say about council's argument that under 278.0205, before you can amend a development agreement, you must obtain the consent of the property owners in the project?
I would look directly at the statute and see what the noticing requirements required by the Nevada legislature has compelled people wanting to amend these agreements must do, and that's what we did. We provided published the notice, published the resolution, and for the HOA to claim that they didn't know about, that's not true. On December 9th, 2005, the appendix shows the minutes of the HOA show that a deputy district attorney from Douglas County went to the HOA meeting and told them what the plans were, that they were planning on putting this improvement in, that future rates and connection charges would be set according to law at a public hearing.
I didn't see anything in those minutes that informed the association of an amendment to the development agreement.
Well, you're correct. But during the discussions, they were talking about...
So what other notice was supplied by the county other than the public notice of the hearing on the Fourth Amendment?
The county did not provide personal notice to each of the existing homeowners.
And in the notice given of the Fourth Amendment, the public hearing on the Fourth Amendment, was there an articulation in the notice of the amendment provisions?
Yes. There would have been a copy of the resolution as part of the notice that's published as part of the agenda.
Do you agree or disagree that 0235 bars or doesn't bar or doesn't apply to this case, 278-0235?
It does apply.
Why does it apply?
Because I will turn to the provision. Those are the 278-0205.
0235.
It applies because any planning or zoning actions taken on the board are made pursuant or authorized by NRS 278.010 to 278.630. That would include development agreements.
Counsel, do you acknowledge that the development agreement in this case contains a provision that requires the consent of successors in interest to amendments to the development agreement?
I would agree that once there is a successor in interest, that yes, notice the provisions of this agreement would apply.
No, that's not my question. Do you agree that there is a provision in the development agreement that requires successors in interest consent to an amendment?
No. Because, as you pointed out, there's an unknown number of potential future successors in interest. At the point the declarant, Five Creek, is in the middle of developing this project, there is no successor in interest at that point. No one has succeeded to Five Creek. They're still developing the project. They're still working with the county, trying to fulfill the conditions that have been imposed by the county.
Well, counsel argues, and I think there might be some support for that point, that in the development agreement there is a provision that requires the consent of successors in interest to any amendment. Assuming that is true, does the bar period in 278-0235 apply to a contract dispute between successors in interest, the county, and Five Creek, who would engage in the Fourth Amendment? And if so, how far does that extend, to the 55 owners or to all lots?
It would extend... It would extend to, well, I guess first off, the statutory limits, the 25-day notice would apply. And it would apply. Why?
Why would it extend to the contract argument that counsel makes under Williams?
Because it is, no action or proceeding may be commenced for the purpose of seeking judicial review or review from or with respect to any final action, decision, or order authorized pursuant to NRS 278.10 through 278.630. In other words, it's the police power of the county, planning and zoning. Anything arising from that, the legislature has provided a mechanism to challenge that and a timeline within which they must challenge it. If it arises from or relates to those planning zoning functions, the legislature said this is how you challenge it.
Okay. Could you comment, though, on the argument that if you don't have notice, you can't consent? I mean, you can't infer consent from somebody who didn't have notice, which is, I think, what your opposing colleague is arguing.
Well, it's like any planning or zoning function. The public at large may be affected by zoning decisions, planning decisions, and that's why the legislature said you need to publish this to everyone, to the world, so that that's how you provide notice. There are many people that will be affected by this decision. The people in the East Valley water system, the people in the West Valley water system, they're all going to be impacted by this decision many years later. If you accept council's argument, they didn't receive notice. But the water system improvements are going to be paid by everybody.
But that's not amending a contract that requires consent. And the statute also augments that by saying consent is required to amend the development agreement.
By the parties. And that's the issue. Our unknown, unnamed, future, contingent, successor in interest, parties to this contract, that each one must consent to an amendment. I mean, what if you accept council's argument, what you've done is made this a dead letter, because every homeowner has veto power over any amendment to a dedication agreement. And again, these are planning and zoning functions.
Well, council, they may not have veto power over a planning and zoning decision with respect to the entire property. But if they have, as 0205 suggests, a vested right with respect to any amendments, they certainly have veto power as to their lot, don't they?
Well, again, it appears they're conflating a development agreement that's still ongoing between the declarant and the county and anyone that may come later on.
Well, the association is in this litigation in a representative capacity. So really it isn't the association as much I'm focused on as it is the individual lot owner. It's the lot owner who under these documents either has or doesn't have a vested right or protection against connection fees or alterations and service fees. And as to that person, do they have a right to veto any alteration to the development agreement under 0205?
No.
Why not?
The general idea is that as you're creating a development, the developer and the county go over the things that are required to make the development work. In other words, if there's a right-hand lane that's required, expanding NRS 278 to include people who might at some point be a successor in interest would make it impractical for the county to be able to control zoning through the development agreement process. The statute doesn't require that kind of notice. It makes clear what kind of notice is required, and that's what the county complied with.
When the county approves these projects, they can approve the language in the development agreement. It appears when this project was approved, they approved these provisions, right?
That's correct.
So now it sort of sounds like the county doesn't want to be bound by the provisions in the development agreement that would extend to members of the association who bought a lot the right to consent to the amendment.
Again, the issue is between the declarants. As you have a development that's going on, things change. Like the width of the roads, right-hand turn lanes.
Mm-hmm.
And again, the issue here is a water system that works. He's saying it's defective. Again, we're talking about a water system that the Safe Bureau Drinking, Nevada Safe Drinking Water Bureau approved of. The county installed this improvement. The issue isn't whether it's unsafe drinking. It's hard on the pipes. So what you're going to have is either increased costs over time or an upfront cost, and the county paid for that upfront cost.
Why did the county do that? The county could look to Job's Peak. In fact, there was a bond and so on and so forth to assure that these repairs were made before the dedication. Why did the county agree to this dedication without requiring Job's Peak to fix the potential corrosive effects of the carbonated water?
There were a number of issues. One is that there were state grants that we were under a deadline to get the project moving. The other issue was there was an adjacent system that had failed, Sheridan Acres Water System, that Job's Peak was supplying water to. The county, and again, this is a function, a discretionary function of the board, they decided that in light of all the circumstances that they would take over the system and that they would ensure that the improvements that the county wanted to make were made.
Well, in April of 2004, as I understand it, the county commissioners and their engineer had knowledge of a corrosion study that said that this water was creating these corrosive effects, right?
That's correct. It had high, elevated levels of carbon dioxide.
Mm-hmm. And then in February of 2006, actually in December of 2005, through the dedication agreement, the county let the developer off the hook for fixing that.
Well,
right?
No, we didn't let them off the hook. I mean, the issue is it was a system that worked. The issue is that it's going to have increased maintenance costs over time. That's true.
Thank you.
Any further? Any other questions from the Justice? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Chase, let me give you 2 minutes in rebuttal.
The one thing I think is interesting is that the developer did not pay any consideration to get rid of the obligation to fix that system and make it comply with the development agreement at the time of dedication. He did pay some connection fees, but the connection fees provided a connection to the service for the particular lots that he was buying for, so that can't be considered consideration to the county for being relieved of anywhere from $500,000 up to $1.3 or $2 million, whatever those costs are. So the developer did not give any consideration. We don't know why. I think the question that Justice Hardesty asked has been the question my clients have been asking for years. Why did the county do this? There could have been a bond. There could have been payment made by the developer according to the development agreement, but why they did that, we have no idea. I think that if we're allowed to proceed to get into this case, if we're again, this is a 12B5 motion. We filed a complaint, and now we're here. So at this stage of the proceedings, I don't know how we can get, at least as to the developer, I don't know how the statute relating to 278 even applies to the developers, the claims that we have against the developer in the county, again, because that contract is outside. That would be about the only comment I would have.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Ritchie and Mr. Chase, for your arguments in this most challenging case to this panel. This matter will stand submitted.